let's go ahead and get started, I guess. Andy said the only reason he put the break in is because he knew we'd start late anyhow. Get that out of the way. So, I think we did pretty good getting here this morning. Why study the Old Testament? That's always the question. I have to admit, when I was a kid growing up, I was taught some pretty hard and fast rules. Pretty much anything that happened before the book of Acts, you didn't have to worry about. That was what I was told. That is an absolute misconception of the Bible. You know, God had a moral law that he gave back before the Garden of Eden, I believe. Because obviously there was something sinful about disobeying God. Else, they wouldn't have gotten in trouble. Jesus said that one jot or one tittle would fail from the law until all was fulfilled. There was a law that has always been and always will be. Why do you think, or where do you think, the Apostle Paul got all those sins that he listed in the New Testament? He got them from the Old Testament. Now, why did he tell Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:15? He says, study to show thyself approved to God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. What word of truth? Oh, well, that means you take Acts and 1st and 2nd Corinthians. No, those books weren't even written when Paul said that. What was he talking about? He was talking about the difference between covenant and law. There is a difference between covenant and law, and I don't pretend to know what that is. That's why I love the Apostle Paul, and because he divided it for me. Because I didn't know, and I still don't know. So Apostle Paul got in there, and he divided it up, and he showed me what was law and what was covenant. But as we look at the old books, we find that we can find instructions for living. We find that we can find history. We can find so much glorious things in those old books if we'll just take a chance to look at them and read them a little bit. And being the guy that I am, the bad memory that I have, every time I look into something a little deeper than just reading past it, I get a whole new experience. Even though I probably studied it out 12 times, it's all new to me when I do it again. So it's good. It's good to study it out and look at it. And I wanted to do this before we got into the book of Esther, just to give you a little idea of where we were at and what we were doing and what's going on. In 607, all these dates are approximate, okay? Don't hold me to these dates, but these are pretty close, well-established kind of figures. They're pretty close. In Jeremiah 52 and 28 is your key off of it. When Jehoiakim was king of Judea, and 33,000 people were carried off to Babylon. That is the beginning of the Babylonian exile. In 597, his son Jehoiakim had displeased God as well, so there was another 832 carried away. And after that, in 586 BC, God said, I am done with these people. And they destroyed the temple, they destroyed Jerusalem, and they took another 745 people. So a total of 4,600 people, according to Jeremiah, were carried away into Babylon. And of course, of that number, tens of thousands returned. But it was not because they took tens of thousands. It was the fact that they were there 70 years. So the fact is that we find that these activities happening well before, you know, the time that we're at now in the book of Esther. In Daniel chapter 5, verse 30, it says, and that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about three score and 2 years old. So he was about 62 years old when he took the kingdom. And I've got some clauses in here because we believe that he was co-regent with Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylonians. Who was? Belshazzar was co-regent with Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar surrendered after this to Cyrus. So that means Darius wasn't king either. Darius was most likely a general under Cyrus who later became king. And that's why the Old Testament is so hard sometimes to understand. It's because it'll call somebody a king, and they were a king, just not at that time. And so you have these little rabbit trails that you can go down and think, well, this just isn't right. You know, I spent 20-30 minutes up in the front office at school talking to some people trying to figure out if Wikipedia was 20 years off on all the kings. But I don't think it was. But it could be. It may very well be. But anyhow, this is the kind of thing that gets us confused. And there's no point in getting caught up in that. If you want to get down and study it out, then do so. But what we have is there'll be an event recorded in the Chronicles, an event recorded in Judges, an event recorded in another book, and they'll all be the same event. And they might have different names. And they might call them a king somewhere, and somewhere else they call them something else. And that's why. It's because, guess what? It's history. And it's real history. That's the other thing I want us to understand, is this is not made up stuff. These are not stories. They are stories, but they're stories about what really happened. They're stories about real life. And they're stories that we need to look at once in a while and try to understand. In 537, the first exiles then began to return from captivity back to Judea. Okay, so that's important for us to remember that it was fairly early. 537. 535, the altar foundation of the temple was begun under Zerubbabel. You can see that in Haggai 2:23 and in Ezra chapter 2. Both places list those people going back. What's really cool is Zerubbabel, who God called my servant, was actually Jehoiakim's great-grandson. So we're back to the kings. Guess what? Israel didn't lose his kingly line. He was under the Persian government of the lineage of the kings of Judah, and they made him regent over that province. So see, it all works out. God's plan always works out. It always works out. In 522, the temple construction was stopped, presumably by people within the Persian government that were upset after Cyrus died in 530. Darius looked at what Cyrus had wrote and said, you know what? Not only are we going to let him go ahead and build it, we're going to pay for it. I think he was a trump, because he was ready to build that wall, man. He was ready to go for it. And he said, not only are we going to build it, we're going to pay. You guys are going to pay for him to build it. And so off they went. In 522 to 518, in that bracket, the prophet Zechariah wrote. His name means God remembered. God remembered what? He remembered his people that had been in exile for 70 years. God remembered. In 520, Haggai wrote, which was what? For his name was a feast, albeit a solemn feast. They were happy, yet we still had trouble. And in 520, the building of the temple resumed. 516, the temple was finished and dedicated. Down at the corner, I have a little picture of the tomb of Cyrus, of all people. Imagine that. We had Darius on the first page from his tomb. I don't know if you noticed that, or if I said that or showed it. Okay, so there's Darius. That's a relief of Darius from off his tomb. And then this is the tomb of Cyrus that they still have to this day. And this is a map of Persia. Now, for those of you who watch the news, this is Pakistan, India, Afghanistan lays here, Iran's here, Iraq, Syria, Israel, Jordan, you know, Egypt down in here, and then of course Turkey up in here. So that gives you an idea of what we're looking at today. There has always been problems in this area, and there will always be problems more likely in this area. And I don't think anybody's ever going to do anything different. But about 100 and, well, maybe not that far, right on the western edge of Iran, very close to Iraq, lays the city that's still there today called Susa. And that was where the original empire's capital was. And all the dark orange is where the Persian Empire finally got to. We had the Persian Empire, the Mede Empire, the Assyrians. All of them were finally combined and coagulated under Cyrus, kept conquering people until he got to where he was. Xerxes, who was king of Persia, actually went into Greece and tried. I don't know if you've ever seen a movie called The 300. A fella that was attacking them was Xerxes. And he'll become really prominent to us here in a little bit. But he failed, of course. And then when Alexander the Great took over, he spent a lot of time destroying stuff in Susa. So that just gives you a little idea. And Persepolis. So this is an aerial photograph of the city of Susa. And this is a picture of this castle down here, and it's hard to see with this resolution, but right here is an area that's flat and has a lot of digging going on in it. And then you have the city laying out here. There's a river runs through it, a little cone-shaped beehive-looking thing over there that I'll call your attention to in a minute. But that flat spot right there is where the French dug in the late 1800s. A castle was built to defend the French archaeologists. The French government built that in the 1800s. It's now, of course, a historic monument itself. But what they were finding there, they were finding the castle in which Daniel was, the castle in which Esther was, the castle in which Nehemiah was the cupbearer. It was all in Susa, or Shushan, as it's written. And they were finding things here. This is where they found the Code of Hammurabi. This is where they found all kinds of historical artifacts and things that to this day lend credence to both old history and the Bible. And so this is today. It's one of the oldest, longest, continuously inhabited cities in the world. That little beehive looking thing, if you can see, this is the interior of it. That's the exterior. That is purported to be Daniel's tomb, just to give you an idea. So that's where he was as well. He was at the palace at Shushan. So it's just kind of a little overview of history to kind of give us an idea. Darius died in 486-ish. Xerxes the First, he probably didn't call him the First because they didn't know, probably just called him Xerxes. They also called him Artaxerxes, which the Greeks added a little bit of the language later. He took over in 486. In 473, Esther, due to some of the events going on, we believe that's when Esther became queen. So we got that. At 485, the second group went back. A little over 80 years, give or take, since the first group and went back. But this is when Ezra went. This is when he reformed the synagogues and the scribes. 445 is when Nehemiah built the wall. That's a very important date because that's part of Daniel's prophecies. Remember building the wall? From the building of the wall. And there's always some confusion about that because they went back so many years earlier, they didn't build the wall. And then in 440, Ezra was written. 433, Nehemiah returned. He went back, instituted some more reforms. 430, Nehemiah wrote a book. And then Malachi wrote a book. And then, of course, this Daniel's prophecy from that point forward that leads to Christ. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful historical thing. In Daniel 8, he said, "When I saw a vision, it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province Elam." So he was at Susa. That's exactly where he was at. This is an important thing that I didn't really notice or ever find before. For some reason, I'd never run across it. They suppose, rabbinic sources suppose, that Xerxes, Esther's king, was who Daniel died when he was king. So there was a ever so slight possibility. Now, the Jews say that it was Haman that killed him. And that follows suit. That makes sense. Don't know if it's true. Daniel had been pretty old. Daniel would have been pretty old. Haman would have been pretty young, but you never know. Because Haman, we know, we can see what he wanted to do to Mordecai. He was a jealous man. He was high in the kingdom. If Daniel had been there, he'd have certainly wanted rid of him. So it's just something to think about. And that's what they believe happened. He was later known as Artaxerxes. And then Ahasuerus was another name. So here he is. He's the son of Darius. And this is what I really wanted to show some of the younger people, especially when you get to reading in the Bible. Okay, the son of Darius, Xerxes I, Artaxerxes, which was his Greek name, Ahasuerus, which is what the Bible called him in places, all are linked to the same king. It's the same guy. All those names refer to the same guy. And if you look, Josephus even called him Arshut. And you say, well, why? What's going on? Well, look at here. Ron, Ronald, Ronnie, Ronnie with a Y, Ronald Eugene, Dad, Papaw, Grandpa, Grandpa, or as the kids at school like to call me, Mr. Scott. Who is that? It's just little me. It's just me. So it's not it's not at all confusing to think that a king might be known by several names, especially when he ruled an empire that had different languages. Not a thing at all to understand that he would have all these different names. Nehemiah 1:1, this is Xerxes' son that Nehemiah, I feel a little doubt that this is his son. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, it came to pass in the month Shizil in the 20th year that I was in Shushan the palace. So here he is, same place. Same place. Nehemiah 2:1, it came to pass in the 9th month, Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king. That is why I thought Wikipedia was wrong. As it's in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, all the dates were off 20 years. But after a little coaxing, a little study, a little bit of remembering different names, I think that's Xerxes' son. I think that's Artaxerxes II is really who that should be. Nehemiah 2:6, the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, if it had been Esther, I think he'd said Esther. I really do. But anyway, for how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return so it please the king to send me? And I set him a time. This just tells us historically that it wasn't a particularly strange event, that it was just a normal day at the palace, So that's where I wanted to get us to. Am I done? Do I even have to talk about courage? Historically, to get us where we were at. Because if you go to reading Esther, and then you look it up online, or you do it on your little tablet phone while I'm talking about it, it's going to tell you that it was a fable. It's just flat going to tell you that. And I'm going to tell you that based on what I just showed you, it is far from a fable. This is real stuff. There is still stuff there today. If you're brave enough to go look, there's still stuff there today. Okay, so we begin Esther. Now in Shushan the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jared, the son of Shimei. I'm mispronouncing these names, I know, I'm sorry. The son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, Jeconiah, second one, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. So he didn't go in the first one. That was another reason he's a little younger than maybe we thought he was, or she was. Mordecai was in the second grab. He brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter. So she was his cousin. She didn't have father or mother. She was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So here she was. She was an orphan, and Mordecai took her, and she was pretty and all that, and he took her, and he was going to raise her, and he was taking care of his cousin. Well, then the king had a drunken feast, you know, and he called for Vashti, and she wouldn't come, and he banished her, and then he regretted it. So in Esther 1:19, the wise men said, if it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him. Let it be written among the laws of Persians and the Medes that it be not altered. That Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus. Let the king give her royal state to another that is better than she. So then fair maidens were sought. The king's servants said to him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king in Esther 2:2. So here goes the story. Esther is a young lady, and Vashti does what any woman would do today, and she gets banished for it. Now we're sleeping. Came to pass when the king's commandment, his decree was heard, many maidens were gathered together into Shushan the palace to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. So she has been brought to the palace among the thrones that they're going to choose a queen. The king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So here she didn't want much. You know, they tell these women, you know, you get whatever you want from the keeper of the women. You go before the king, She didn't want nothing. She said, this is whatever I'm supposed to have. I don't care. And he loved her. He loved her. She was probably just a real simple, down-to-earth person is what it was. In those days, while Mordecai sat at the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen. And Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree. And it was written in the Chronicles of the king. So Mordecai, he's like, hey, Esther, I heard these guys talking. They're going to kill him. So she tells him. She tells the king, they're Mordecai, my uncle, sitting out there at your gate. He said that something's going to happen. And they did. They found out and they put him to death. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman. For the king so commanded concerning him. But here's the deal. Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Mordecai's an old man. He's been in the gate. He is an elder of the Jews. He's like, I'm not bound to this clown. You know, where have we heard that before? We hear that a lot in Babylon, don't we? And he just said, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to bow down before him. And Haman, man, it just made Haman madder and madder every time he walked by him. Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. Their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's prophet to suffer them. Look, dude, these people, they're not even trying. They ain't trying to serve you. I don't even know why you're letting them live. The letters were sent by post to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day. Even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. So old Haman, he got his way. Let's just kill them all. All right, well, on such and such a day, kill all the Jews. Posts went out being hastened to the king's commandment. The decree was given in Shushan the palace, and the king and Haman sat down to drink. But the city of Shushan was perplexed. You know why? Because Haman is the only one that hated the Jews. They saw this post and they're like, what? That'd be like us getting a decree from somewhere to kill all the redheads on Thursday. What? Why? You know, I know they're annoying, but why? And that's what he did. He's just like, kill all the Jews. And they're like, okay, I don't understand what we're doing here. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes, put on sackcloth of ashes, went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry. And Esther sent him clothes. And she said, tell him to get dressed. Tell him not to worry. Tell him no. And she didn't know why. She hadn't heard why. But then he said he also gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given to Shushan to destroy them, to show it to Esther, and to declare it to her and charge her that she should go to the king to make supplication to him and make requests before him for her people. This is why I'm upset, Esther. You got to go talk to the king. You got to go talk to him. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces to know that whosoever, man or woman, coming to the king, to the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. That is a cool law if you're king, right? Because then nobody will bother you unless it's something important. I'd like to do that to the kids sometimes at school, you know. If I don't hold out my royal scepter, you can go to office, you know. I'm done. But he said he called, she said he hadn't called me for a month. He said, Mordecai, he doesn't want me. I don't understand. I can't go. I could die. I may die if I go. And Mordecai said, well, you've got to do it. And she said, well, go and gather together all the Jews that are present at Shushan and fast ye for me, neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also in my maidens will fast likewise, and then I'll go to the king, which is not according to law. And if I perish, I perish. I'll go talk to him, but I'm going to tell you, I could die. I could die by going to see him. Came to pass on the third day, Esther put on her royal apparel, stood in the inner court of the king's house over against the king's house. The king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. The king held out Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. And then the king said unto her, "What wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be even given to thee to the half of the kingdom." And Esther answered, "If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day to the banquet that I have prepared for him." That's why he loved Esther. Beautiful woman standing there waiting on him. "Come here, hon. What do you want? I'll give you anything you want up to half the kingdom." She said, "Just come for dinner. It's all I want, just you." And so they went. After that, Haman went forth that day full of joy. He got to go too, you know. Glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, guess what? Mordecai still ain't getting up. He's not stood up and removed for him. He was full of indignation against Mordecai. He's just getting hotter and hotter as time goes by. Verse 13, "Yet all this availeth me nothing. Oh, I'm getting in good with the king. Everything's going great. I'm getting to go to King Esther or Queen Esther's banquets. As long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate, it's killing me." Then said Jeresh his wife and all his friends unto him. Good group of friends here. "Let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king to the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. He's going to get all of it, buddy. He's getting to go see Esther. He's getting to go to the banquet with the king. He's getting it all. "I'm going to make a gallows. I'm going to hang Mordecai. Hoopy-doo." Well, on that night, the king couldn't sleep. He commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles. They were read before the king. That puts you to sleep. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor and dignity has been done to Mordecai for this?" The king's servant said, "Nothing. Been done anything." He saved my life and I didn't do nothing. I reckon that's why he didn't sleep that night. The Lord wanted to remind him of that. Well, the king said, "Who's in the court?" It's the next morning. Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak to the king to hang Mordecai. He's coming going to say, "Hey, we need to hang this guy." On the gallows he prepared for him, the king's servant said to him, "Behold, Haman standeth in the court." The king said, "Let him come in." And so Haman came in. The king said, "What shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor?" Oh boy. And now Haman thought in his heart, "To whom would the king delight to do honor more than me?" He's talking about me. Man, life is going good. It's going so good he forgot about Mordecai. He said, "Oh, that's what we need to do. We need to put him on a horse. We need to give him a ring. We need to put a robe." King said to Haman, "Make haste. Take the apparel. Take the horse. As thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate, and let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken." Then Haman took the apparel and the horse, and arrayed Mordecai, and brought him on horseback through the streets of the city, and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor." The guy he would want to hang, he's leading him around on the king's horse, the king's robe, with king's ring on his finger. Oh, Mordecai, he's getting Haman. Haman's getting his comeuppance. So the king and Haman came to banquet with Esther the queen. The king said to Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, "What is thy petition, Queen Esther?" and it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed, even to the half of the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, If I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we'd been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I'd held my tongue. Although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said to Esther the queen, Who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so? What are you talking about? Ain't nobody gonna kill you as long as I'm here, Queen Esther. Esther said, The adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. He probably still hadn't put two and two together yet. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. You can see that, can't you? He is so mad he doesn't like you and me, do he? Jumped up and he had to go outside and cool off before he done something he's going to regret. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw there was evil determined against him by the king. Reckon? Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine, and Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. And then said the king, Will he force the queen also before me in the house? And as the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Arbana, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, Behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who spake good for the king, stands in the house of Haman. The king said, Hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Boy, that's it right there, buddy. He was so mad that they put their hands over Haman's mouth so he didn't say any more. That's how mad the king, I can imagine these guards. They were like, We got to get him out of here. He's going to kill us all. And could you blame him? He said, What? Who? Who done it? And now, what are you trying to do? Force the queen? Hey, he built some gallows to hang her uncle on. Yeah, well, that's a good place to hang him, isn't it? Yeah, buddy. On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, and to Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose, stood before the king, and said, If it please the king, and if I have found favor in thy sight, and the things seem right before the king, and if I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman the son of Matthah the Agite, which he had wrote to destroy the Jews which are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come into my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Her job still wasn't done because them letters were still out there. They were still floating around. We done found out from Vashti he can't change those letters. So the king granted the Jews which are in every city to gather themselves together to stand for their life, to destroy, slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people in the province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for prey. So I can't change what I said, but I tell you what I can do. I can write and tell the Jews that they are to defend themselves. And they are to defend themselves well. Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold, with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. They didn't like Haman either. Now the 12th month, it is a month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's commandment and his decree drew near to be put into execution. In the day of the enemies, the Jews hoped to have power over them. Though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated them. The Jews gathered themselves together in their cities and throughout all the provinces of the king Ashurus to lay hold on such as sought their hurt. And no man could withstand them, for the fear of them fell upon all people. And all the rulers of the provinces, and the lieutenant, and the deputies, and officers of the king helped the Jews, because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame went out through all the provinces. For this man Mordecai waxed greater and greater. You know, all the king's people and all the king's men said, "We're going to help the Jews, man. Mordecai is a Jew. Let's help them." And so they did. And then the Feast of Purim was established. Established this day to keep the 14th day of the month Adar and the 15th day of the same yearly as the day wherein the Jews rested from their enemies. A day of feasting and joy and of sending portions to one another and gifts to the poor. Come from the word pur, which is means to say the lot. And these days after the name of pur, it's called Purim. I got to go to Purim feast the other day. It's pretty cool. The reason I did was because they still have them. February 28th through March 1st of next year. This year it was March 11th and 12th. So they still have them. They still do it. Still to this day, things that happened in Esther are going on around us. Do we even know that? Do we even know? All because of Esther. Esther's courage. Courage is bravery or valor. It's the choice and the willingness to confront agony, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. Physical courage is bravery in the face of physical pain. Moral courage is when you act right, even though there's popular opposition. Okay, so we have courage. Courage to stand against something. When they had sent the multitude away, they took him even as he was in the ship. There was also with him other little ships. There arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat under the ship so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and said to him, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" And he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased and there was a great calm. And he said to them, "Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said one another, "What manner of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" They lacked courage. What was that equated to? A lack of faith. They lacked faith. That's why they didn't have any courage. Esther apparently had a little bit of both. Things are necessary. Do you know you cannot enjoy the Lord saying, "Peace, be still," to a storm if there was no storm to start with? If it hadn't been for the cross, if it hadn't been for those quiet days when he was in the tomb, there would have been no resurrection morning. If there wasn't him in the tomb, there'd be no empty tomb. If there wasn't sorrow, there'd never be any joy. We have to have tribulation. Tribulation has to be a part of what we go through to shape us, to mold us, to show us what is good, to show us what is right. He talked about that last night at church. He was talking about how that it was necessary for us as a person to grow, to have tribulation. If everything always went our way, you know, where would we be? "Be strong and courageous. Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, but for all the multitude that's with them. For there be more with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. He said, "Look, there may be a lot of them, but there's more with us. They have flesh and we have God. We have God." 2 Timothy 1 and 5, he said, "When I call remembrance the unfeigned faith, the not faked, there's nothing false about your faith, which dwelt first in Lois and Eunice, I'm persuaded in thee also." He said, "God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." That's what God has given to us. Not because we're anything, but because of our faith in Him. In Hebrews 11, he referenced this last night. He said, talking about the great men and women of old, they through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others had trials and cruel mockings and scourges, yea, moreover, bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, they were tempted, they were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and in caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Maybe they were courageous. Well, yeah. They were full of faith. They were courageous. But you know what? A lot of them were killed. Are you beginning to see something here maybe that might discourage you a little bit? Courage doesn't mean you're going to win. Courage does not always mean that you're going to come out on top. Daniel knew the writing was signed. He went in his house, his windows being opened, his chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Was Daniel courageous? Yes, he was. Did Daniel know that the lions weren't going to eat him? No, he did not. Esther 4:16, I'll go to the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. Esther didn't know that the king was even going to hold out the golden scepter, let alone do what she wanted him to do. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel 3. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he can save us, king. We don't really have to do. But you know what? Even if he doesn't, we're still not going to do it. That's courage. 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 Do we have what it takes to know that, yes, we may not prevail? That's true courage. I'll leave it with you.